Hello, and welcome to episode 28 of Light and the Dark, an unofficial Star Wars podcast about one man's hyperspace journey through the entirety of Star Wars canon, hopefully within the span of 1 year. I'm your host, probably the only person who wasn't certain who it was going to be on that X-Wing, Dan McGillen. And with that, actually, I would like to lead off with a fairly important statement about this episode. So typically, I've been avoiding Mandalorian spoilers because, I'm recording this so frequently and so close to when the episodes are released, et cetera, et cetera. At this point, I'm going to completely spoiler warning this entire episode, and here's why. In addition to wanting to talk about the season finale of Mandalorian in some detail, additionally, my interview subject for today, Paul Pogue, specifically, we do get into the specifics of what happens in Mandalorian, all of the second season of Mandalorian. So with that in mind, in order to be able to keep that content in, and I think it's some interesting conversation, so I did want to be able to keep that in. I've gone ahead and this entire episode potentially has spoilers for all of season two of Mandalorian, and honestly, the entire Star Wars franchise in general. You have been warned. If you have not yet caught the season finale, particularly of Mandalorian season two, definitely do not listen to the rest of this episode until you've done so, and then come back. But just put it off. It's fine. It'll be here when you're ready for it. So with that, I'd like to get into the list of things we're going to be talking about today. First up being progress this week, and really it's actually this 2 weeks. The holidays have been not kind to my podcasting schedule, or in fact to my Star Wars reading and listening schedule. As it turns out, I finished one item this week, and that one item was episode 8 of season 2 of The Mandalorian. So more on that in a minute, but just so obviously at this point we are at the beginning of the last week of the year. The goal was to finish within the span of a year. I still have 7,000 or 8,000 pages to read. I have made some progress in the book I'm currently reading, but not enough to actually finish the book, obviously. So I really only have the one item for this week that was finished. Second topic, of course, is the holiday, actually. We'll get into that more in a minute here. And of course, for my third topic this week is the interview with Paul Pogue. So with that, let's go back to the big thing from the past few weeks, which is the season finale of Mandalorian. Again, if you haven't watched it yet, you may not want to listen to the rest of this episode. Wow, was not expecting things to go the direction that they did. There were so many references and callbacks and things that tied back to Rebels and other stuff in Mandalorian, particularly this second season of Mandalorian. But for it to finish with literally Luke Skywalker, that's pretty amazing. Wasn't expecting it. And I know that sounds kind of naive and ridiculous. I've been told on these things I'm sometimes somewhat dense. But I mean, here's the thing. Literally had to stop and talk to the wife and go, okay, so who are the Jedi that are alive at this point? Because she was trying to think of who this could definitively be. And you know, okay, in retrospect, yes, okay, it's an X-Wing. It's probably, if it's a Jedi, it's an X-Wing, and then we see shortly after it lands, okay, it's Jedi. X-Wing plus Jedi probably means Luke. But not definitively, but it's a pretty good indication. And we do eventually, you know, find out that it is. But there was a question of, well, what Jedi are alive at this point? Like, well, we don't know what's up with Ezra Bridger. We know of Ahsoka Tano, but she probably isn't flying an X-Wing around. And who else could there be at this point? And keeping in mind, this is about 5 years after the end of episode 6. So Luke probably hasn't had a chance to fully start his Jedi school yet. There's, you know, the only Jedi that are going to be around are either ones that we know about from other media that we don't know their current status of, Jedi that have been managing to hide this whole time, of which, and this is the other big thing from season 2 of The Mandalorian. I mean, okay, there's so many big things, honestly. between Bo-Katan showing up and Ahsoka Tano showing up and then Luke Skywalker showing up. I mean, that's pretty crazy. But then actually finding out that the child has a name, Grogu, and that not only, you know, is he aware of the Jedi, but he lived in the Jedi Temple, which is crazy to think about, having him not having been covered previously. And obviously someone helped him escape. We don't necessarily know the details of that yet, although there has been rampant speculation online as to how he might have escaped being slaughtered with the rest of the younglings in the Jedi Temple. But wow, I mean, just all of that stuff hitting this season with Mandalorian just was stunning. There's actually another thing that I really want to mention, and that is there is a quote that I did not pick up, was a repeat of the quote from earlier in the season. And let me get the exact words for you. "You have something I want. You may think you have some idea what you were in possession of, but you do not. Soon he will be back with me. He means more to me than you will ever know." Pretty intense words. And one of the emotional, hard-hitting points of the series, in my opinion. But I didn't totally catch, until Alice reminded me, that this is literally, almost word for word, the exact speech that Moff Gideon gave exactly one season before, the seventh episode of the previous season. Yeah, wow. I've known the whole time that this show was something special, but I don't think I really got how truly special it was until moments like these in the most recent season. Just wow. So to follow that with, you know, the whole fact that, oh, look, guess what's happened? We have an additional Star Wars series announced. That's crazy. Just crazy. Like, the fact that we're going to have four different Star Wars series taking place at this exact moment in time in the timeline is just stunning, particularly because, as I think I've mentioned before, it's a pretty empty area of the timeline. But just to know that we have those plus so many other series at other various points, there is so much really cool stuff coming, and I'm super excited about it. I know my progress on the project might make it seem like I'm losing steam, and to a certain extent that may be true. Honestly, it's more just been a combination of the fact that the holidays have required a lot of my time, as they always do. I mean, you know, if you've got kids and you're doing Christmas, you know, no matter what you do as a family for Christmas, if you do something, if you do some sort of celebration, I think it really does end up that doing that takes time. And it was good time. It was time I'm really glad to have been able to spend with the kids, you know, this year, and to try and make Christmas a special time of year in a year that was full of so many unpleasant realities and so much being just stuck at home all the time. So I'm super happy that we were able to do what we were able to do relating to the holidays, but it did mean I have not been sitting on my time off the last week or so, at home, with, you know, a margarita in one hand and a book in the other. That's certainly not been the experience. I've barely found the time to read any at all. And so I haven't made any forward progress. Obviously that puts us in a situation, where my current target for the items that were left in canon, that needed to be finished, is incorrect. Obviously I'm not going to finish all the rest of what's left in the next few days, which I've done for a while, but even if it was everything but the games, then there would still be a fairly small, you know, window after the new year. And I think that still may be the case. It just kind of depends on how it goes. But it does mean now that things are coming out that I have not accounted for in my spreadsheet. Or they will be starting, you know, as soon as the first, potentially. So my current plan regarding that is to go ahead and continue with the things that I already know about and deal with those first. And then, you know, once I get to that point, then re-true up the list of what's in canon with my from Wikipedia and other sources with what I know and what is on my list and see what I'm missing and fill in those gaps and finish things out that way strongly. My guess is honestly, my guess is probably end of February at this point. That's probably when it's going to happen. So, you know, I will have done it in about 14 months. Having said that, the sheer amount of content released in 2020, it's pretty amazing, pretty impressive, honestly. Actually, as a matter of fact, the fact is, this year there have been 179 items added to canon. That's 58 comics, one junior readers, six novels, 65 short stories, 45 television episodes, two video games, and two young readers. So that's a lot. Obviously, with the comics and the junior readers, the short stories, even to a certain extent, the television episodes, particularly since some of them are the, like, Forces of Destiny and other things that are shorter form. You know, they are a lot of small things. But there are two video games, neither of which have been finished, on my list. And there are six novels. I mean, so, and if you look at the time spent on all of these various components and tracking them down and reading them and watching them, the reality is if Star Wars were a static thing, if Star Wars were over, which I'm happy to say in 2020, going into 2021 here, it's not over. It's definitely an ongoing thing. But if it were a static thing and it were over, and at the start of 2020, I had the list of everything that was in canon at that point and available, I think I'd be close. Or I would have been close enough, at least, that I would have made the effort to squeeze in enough at the end of the year to fit it all in and get everything done in 1 year. Having said that, where I am now with it, I don't think it is advisable at this point to even try to get through all of Star Wars in 1 year. I think the amount of time that it requires a person to do that is, it's just a lot. Couple hours a day on average. And not only that, but it's becoming more and more as time goes on. And particularly with so many of these new TV series coming out with fairly long episodes, continuing to be released, you know, at a fairly decent clip. Because if I understand correctly from looking at my list, it looks to me like six novels is actually a fairly small number for a given year. And I think COVID was the responsibility for that. But it just, the amount of content that's being released and the length of some of that content, it's just going to get harder and harder as time goes on to finish this. If a person truly wants to experience everything in a year, it's becoming harder and harder to do that. And I think it's not practical at this point. There are certainly things that can be done. So if you took out all the things that were duplicative, so the various retellings of the films and some of those things, obviously that would take out some, and it would probably be somewhat reasonable to expect to be finished in a year. But just looking at the sheer amount of content coming, I don't think it's reasonable. I don't think it's a good expectation to do that. Also, the more, you know, and I think I've talked about this, I've probably beaten this topic to death, but I think it does bear repeating because, you know, my approach to this was originally intended to be very chronological, but working within the framework of what my life is like, because you can't just literally, I mean, I could have literally said, I'm just going to literally do everything in exactly chronological order from beginning to end, and I could have done that. But there would have been times I would have gotten stuck and stayed stuck for a while just because of what my time allowed me to do or where I was when I had free time, not being able to, you know, if I'm standing in line at the bank, I can pull out my Kindle reader on my phone and read 10 pages of a book, right? But I can't exactly easily pop up Disney Plus and watch an episode of Rebels in that environment, or certainly wouldn't be polite to do so. With the audio component, you know, and walking around with headphones in out in public anyway, I don't know. If you do that, that's fine. And I have been known to do it from grocery shopping occasionally, but in general, I try to keep my ears open when I'm out in public, just so if something is going on, I know what's going on. But either way, so I tried to take a chronological approach, But realistically, looking at it, I don't think it's just not good. It's not how Star Wars is meant to be experienced. And because the stories are spread over such a wide swath of time, I don't think it's really necessary. I think it's very important. If Star Wars is important enough to you that you want to undertake an undertaking like this, where you say, I just want to experience it all, or these pieces that are interesting to me or sound interesting to me, I think it's more important that you get well-grounded in the timeline. I think you start that by enjoying all the films in their context. From there, I think you understand, even if you're not going to watch them, I think it's important to understand where the Clone Wars TV series fits in there, particularly because there is so much of it, and likewise where Star Wars Rebels and where Star Wars Resistance fit into it, where the various television series, all of them at this point, are going to fit into it. And watch them if you're going to, but particularly those three animated series, and lesser extent, Star Wars Resistance, honestly, but certainly Rebels and Clone Wars. I think it's very important to understand where they fit in the timeline and what they do, what their purpose is. And then from there, once you have that pretty good grasp of here's the movies, here's the general outline of the storyline, here's the time gaps between those major elements of the saga, then you can start to pick and choose other elements of the timeline and enjoy those and go, okay, this is where are we in the timeline? What is going on in the universe? What's the status of the Jedi? What is the status of the Jedi? What is the status of Luke Skywalker? You know, what Jedi are alive right now? What is the status of the Empire or the Republic or the New Republic or, you know, the First Order? What's going on in the world right now in the framework of the history of this universe? And saying this, that actually makes me realize I kind of know the history of Star Wars at this point better than I do the history of my own country that I grew up in. Although, interestingly, you know, a lot of the history that we're taught in school kind of does also, you know, follow along with these wars, like everything's, you know, World War One, World War Two, Revolutionary War. But I digress. I think it's more important to get that basic grounding, get your story, get the basic concept in there of what is going on in a general sense, and then figure out what you want to do and pick a topic and stick to it. And that could be something as simple as saying, I'm going to follow Ahsoka. I'm going to do everything involving Ahsoka from the beginning of the timeline to the end. And you know, that's possible. It could be something different. It could be saying, you know, I'm going to watch the Clone Wars series, or I'm going to read all the comics, regardless of where they take place in canon. And in those cases, I think it is somewhat helpful. Some of them, they jump around in time a little bit, so some of them it is helpful to read them chronologically, but on the other hand, it's also perfectly reasonable to read them in a publishing order, actually. That works really well, too. So, you know, the Star Wars series, even though earlier, or some of the numbered issues of that take place way earlier back in the times before or around episode one, following, you know, Ben Kenobi's journal, and those reading those first versus starting the Star Wars series at issue one and then reading through to that point in the story where we jump backwards. Chronological has its benefits, but I don't think they're as good as the benefits are there as much as the benefits of reading things in the order that they were released, particularly within a given series or a given concept. The Kanan series is another one that kind of jumps around, and I think it's a lot more logical to just read that comic from issue one to the last issue versus what I did, which was very different from that. So that's all that to say. So I did this thing, and I think I did it wrong. And it's, that doesn't invalidate it, I don't think. But it does make me take a pause and say, hey, if this is a thing that it interests you, if picking all this up is of value to you, or you think you'd like to follow this story deeply, I think doing it the way I did it is not the right way. I think it's far better to take a more pragmatic and or release order approach and pick an area, particularly with the type of thing you're reading, I think helps a lot. But even within like the novels, for example, it probably makes more sense to read the Battlefront novels in the order that they were released, versus necessarily a chronological order, or even in relation to the other novels that were written that aren't part of the Battlefront series. I don't think treating those series as all kind of interwoven, while it's true in a sense, it's not as important in the overarching story of the individual novels, that they integrate with each other better than they integrate with the broader materials. So putting things in chronological order with those doesn't always keep you on the same topic as well. And I think that might lead to a lesser understanding or a lesser engagement with the characters and the storylines. So just something I've been thinking about more and more as I get nearer to the end of the project, although, you know, in the last few weeks, not much nearer. So yeah, I did skip, of course, last week. I think I mentioned that already. And that's okay. It is the way it is. Continuing from here, though, I have some time again, and the holidays are over. I'm still off work for another week. I hope to get some good reading done and continue that into the new year and into my new projects with getting to the games and all of that, and catching everything else up to where I do finally eventually finish the project. And that is still the goal. Actually was asked a question by a good friend of mine recently, which was, you know, are the games, since that's one of the big things you haven't hit yet, are the games actually worth it, and do they have the narrative value behind them? And that's a complicated question. So the vast majority of games, of course, that have been released that are canon at this point, keeping in mind all the many Star Wars games that were released before that are no longer canon, but as far as ones that are actually considered canon at this point, the vast majority of them are little flash games that don't have much story. Those don't add anything, I don't really think, or much. They're interesting as a curiosity. They're interesting because they are technically canon, but they're technically canon in a very flimsy sort of a way. I don't think they're critical at all. But having said that, some of the games that are left on my list, like Battlefront 2, has a single-player campaign that tells a story. And likewise, there are two or three of the other games left on my list are fully fleshed out storyline campaign modes that have a story that is a canon Star Wars story. So while for some of the items that are on the game's list, particularly some of the ones that are like the flash game that's no longer around or whatever, that is got 100 hours of video or something ridiculous like that, I don't think that's going to add much to my understanding of the story, and I am going to investigate that more just to see, you know, if there is enough depth of story there to be worth actually pursuing beyond just understanding how the game works and having a general sense of what it was. So we'll see when we get to that one. But no, I think having the games as part of this is important. And that's just, you know, for my purposes. Once again, this is the sort of thing that can be done in so many different ways by so many different people with different goals and hopes. I'm not saying that my way is right. I would certainly say my way is probably about as comprehensive as you can go. That's not necessarily a good thing. But that is kind of by nature, I guess, with these sorts of things. So yeah, I mean, I am continuing, things are moving forward. We'll see how it goes. But anyway, enough about that. Let me move on to the next topic, which is one that is a little bit off topic, but still on the Star Wars topic. So I had a lovely Christmas, and specifically had received two really nice gifts for Christmas that were Star Wars related. The first one is a lovely Star Wars Porg shirt that just says Star Wars and then has a Porg with like a sunset on it. It's kind of a very retro looking kind of a theme to the shirt. So that's pretty cool. That was a lovely gift from my family for the Christmas holiday. The other thing is a thing I had not really heard of, at least not the Star Wars version of this. So there is a Star Wars Lego set called Lego the Sith. And it is a really interesting art project. So basically what you're dealing with is a 16 by 16 grid. Well, it's really three. How do I even describe this? So imagine you have a Lego base plate that's 16 by 16 spots, and you have colored Lego bits, the little pips, of 12 different colors. And you have a book with a design that you then build with the pips, that design on the sheet or on the 16 by 16 grid. And you actually have not just one of those, but you have nine of them. So it creates a 3x3 grid. It's about, I guess it's probably about a foot square in total when it's done. So you put all these pips on there and you assemble it with some support rods between the different panels. And then after you've done all of that, then you actually take additional Lego pieces attached to the back and the sides to reinforce it and kind of give it a frame. And then you end up with a hangable piece of art. So I had seen that Lego was doing kind of some of these with some various artwork, but I had not seen that they were doing a Star Wars one. And as it turns out, it is. And my wife found out about it and got me that for a Christmas gift this year. And it's really cool, actually. The thing about it is that it actually comes with three different designs. So the designs that this is, there is a Kylo Ren, there is a Darth Vader, and there is a Darth Maul. And all three of those designs can be made using this kit. So you just pick which one you want to build from the book. So that's kind of cool. Just the idea that, you know, you have this piece, you can build this piece of art, you pick which one of the three you want to build, and after a period of time, you can say, okay, that was fun. Now I want to rebuild it. So, you know, 6 months or whatever, you can take all the pieces off, sort them back out, and put them back on if you want, as a different character or whatever. So that's one thing. The other thing they did that's fairly clever, and I appreciate, although, like most things Lego, this is a fairly expensive set. It's more than $100 typically. If you were to get three of the Sith set, they actually have a fourth design you can do that is a Darth Vader design, but it's not the same as the Darth Vader design that you make with just one panel. And it's not even just take that and extend it to two more panels. It's actually a completely different pose, different everything. And you can build this third design that requires all of the bits and bobs from three whole sets. So that's kind of neat. And then, of course, that builds a very large, it ends up being something like 1 foot by 3 foot tall. So 1 foot wide, 3 foot tall version of an image. So anyway, very clever. The other thing they did, and this is actually, I have very mixed feelings on the other part of this. So they, obviously this process of building this takes a very long time. And I say that as someone, I'm definitely enjoying the process of building it. It's a different kind of zen kind of a thing. But you also have to understand, I do perler bead sprite type artwork stuff sometimes. So I'm very used to, like, you know, like you lay out the tray and you lay out the beads and you get them in place and whatever. The thing I hadn't accounted for with this project, though, when I started, was that you have to actually snap in place, where with perler beads, they're little pegs on the pegboard, and so you just slip the bead onto the peg using the hole. So actually putting an individual pixel down, as it were, ends up taking a little bit longer per piece, so it is a little bit more of a time commitment. But in any case, they thought it would be fun to include an audio program with this thing. So there's a little QR code that you can scan inside the book, and it takes you to a website, and the website has this 2-hour audio program that you can do side by side. And from the description and from what I was seeing, it kind of sounded like it was going to be a soundscapes kind of thing, like it was going to have music from the series and random quotes from throughout the series and some of that kind of stuff, and be a very nebulous kind of a, you know, audio sort of a thing. In the end, that's actually not remotely what it is at all. It's really more of a, it's an interview program with various people who were responsible for creating the styles of Darth Maul and Darth Vader and Kylo Ren, and what they look like and why they are the way they are, and interviews with the people who did the design of the Lego poses for these artworks, and various other kind of background information and detail and interviews, but a vast majority of it is one person interviewing one of these other creatives that were involved with the actual creation of the characters in the series, which is cool. It is interesting. The flaw there, though, is that building this thing, at this point, I don't know exactly how much time I've logged. What I can tell you is that I sat down and started working on it, and I listened to the entire 2-hour thing, having not actually finished more than a couple panels out of the 9 that you have to do. So their thought or their reference is that you'll be able to listen to this over and over as you're continuing your project, and I'm going, I don't know that I would want to listen to interviews with the same people over and over while I worked on a project. Like, I think, I'm sure the licensing of the music beyond the little bit that is present, it would be a challenge. But definitely, having run out of, you know, listened to that whole thing, and it was definitely worth the time to do that. I'm not criticizing the quality of what they built as good for what it is. It's just not much of it, and it's certainly not reusable in the way that, say, an audio soundtrack with just music and character quotes and stuff like that might be a little bit more so. Obviously, you can find stuff like that online very easily, or just do what I did when working on it earlier today, which was put on the soundtrack to The Force Awakens and just play that in the background while I'm building. So, obviously, and you know. But yeah, if you have a music subscription, you probably have all of the Star Wars soundtracks available to you from that. If not, you're probably also a big enough Star Wars fan that you have the soundtracks in some form, or some of them anyway, or can go find them on YouTube or whatever. There's plenty of ways to hear that music, or do something truly weird, like put on the Star Wars Holiday Special. And no, I don't mean the recent one, I mean the old one. Or, I don't know, the crazy Star Wars disco album from many years ago. You know, one of those things. Put something like that on. Why not? Go crazy. Have fun. Do something to kind of augment what you're doing, because it is very zen, but it is also somewhat tedious. Not to say that I don't enjoy it. I actually have very much enjoyed building it. And the thing that's kind of surprising me about it is how working on it at a panel at a time, you really don't see the picture for the whole, for what it is. But even like at this point, I've got 5 of the 9 panels done, and I'm about halfway through with the 6th, and I have the 5 panels that are done assembled together, and looking at it up close, I could kind of see the picture that I was supposed to see, but not really. But now I'm sitting here recording this, and the picture is 10 feet away from me, the 5 panels that are done. And I could clearly see what they're trying to do there. So there's a very interesting thing going on with perspective and distance there that I think is really cool. So kudos to the team who put this thing together for coming up with the way that they did. Just the fact that it's kind of deceptive in that you're working on small parts of a whole and you don't really see the big picture even when you're working on it up close until you actually step back and look at it really properly. So this is absolutely going to be a piece that I'm going to love to hang up in my office. It's something that it takes enough time to build that I will probably leave it for, you know, 6 months or so before I change over to one of the other designs. But in general, very cool. Loving working on it. Loving the idea behind it. It's they took a risk and they took a gamble to do something really bizarre and out off the wall and strange. And it's led to one of the most unusual Star Wars products that I've encountered. So good job to the team that did that. Today on Light and the Dark, we have Paul Pogue, a journalist, writer, and geek culture expert that I also happen to know personally, and I'm happy to have on the show. Welcome to the show, Paul.
Oh, I'm incredibly happy to be here, Daniel. Thank you.
So I kind of wanted to start, because I did mention you're a geek culture expert, before I even get into the Star Wars stuff, I just wanted to kind of give the audience a sense of, I don't want to say your geek cred, but that's kind of the direction I'm going with that. So what are your geeky interests and your fandoms and things that you're into across the board that would help our audience know who you are and where you're coming from?
Yeah, I would say my I'm a huge Star Wars fan, absolutely. You know, I was one of my earliest memories of seeing Empire Strikes Back in the theater when I was 5. I saw Star Wars in the theater at some point. I don't remember when. There were so many re-releases back then. I don't even remember which one I saw first, to be honest. But, you know, I definitely saw all three Star Wars in the theaters. And I've been a huge fan ever since. I'm definitely one of that generation who sees Luke Skywalker as kind of the formative hero of our generation. I'm also a Marvel Comics fan. You know, the Marvel Universe is probably my favorite fictional universe. If there's a PhD in Marvelology, I could probably apply for it. When I was younger, I could do things like rattle off the Avengers in order of when they joined. But, you know, my memory is not what it used to be. But definitely, you know, especially old school Marvel from the 60s and 90s. If I applied the amount of effort I did to knowing that stuff to, like, the real world, I would probably be a millionaire right now. But I didn't, so now I'm a big talking nerd. Nintendo era video games I was a huge nerd for and still am. Marvel, Star Wars, Transformers, and G.I. Joe, I'm a huge nerd for those. What else? That covers the big stuff. It invariably all comes back to Marvel somehow because all of those things were Marvel properties back in the 80s. And Star Wars is a Marvel property again, more or less. So I'm just one of those people that's a perfect example of how well Stan Lee's old Carnival Barker thing worked, because my first exposure to Marvel was Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends in 1981, which A, Stan narrated and made sure he had his name front and center, and just like in the old bullpen bulletins columns, and also he just shoved every Marvel reference he could into the Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends show. So if you just watch that one season of it, you have a really good grounding in all the Avengers and X-Men and Spider-Man villains. Very clever, you know, synergistic marketing, they call it now. Back then, it was just Stan being Stan.
It's funny that you mentioned that synergism and everything crossing over and whatever, because that's absolutely the strategy that Disney seems to be using now with all of the things that it's doing.
Yeah.
Between things as strange as like them doing a Phineas and Ferb Star Wars special, and I mean, you know, the crazy stuff they've done with the MCU and all of those things. It's really that seems to be the name of the game. So, obviously you mentioned that, you would see of course, the original films, back in the day, or at least on re-releases or in any case, beyond that though, specifically for you, and this is a question that I ask everybody, it kind of gets a kind of a baseline. What does Star Wars mean to you? So what I'm asking for there is not strictly just, these are all the things I watched and read and am into, but also, what characters stuck out to you? How has it affected your life in other ways? What do you draw inspiration from? Kind of all those things together.
Yeah, you had told me that this would be a question before, and boy, I've been thinking about that for a while, and it's kind of hard to explain because part of what made Star Wars Star Wars, it was everywhere. It was a shared generational experience. You know, if you were a kid in the late 70s and early 80s, Star Wars was the center of your cultural universe. You know, it was almost inescapable. And, you know, that kind of shared culture thing is not something common anymore. You know, it wasn't even common then. It was kind of unique that it happened. And a lot of Hollywood since then has been kind of chasing that with diminishing returns. And every so often, something like the MCU grabs that same thing again. So, you know, but that shared cultural knowledge, I think, was pretty potent. You know, a lot of the I think in a lot of ways Joseph Campbell is overrated, but the way his ideas were applied in Star Wars was pretty effective because George Lucas was going for this universal thing. And, you know, starting from the whole concept of wanting something more, you know, seeing something better in your life and wanting to go for it, and then finding out it's not all that, and then still trying to find a way to keep on going. You know, Luke Skywalker's whole journey in the movies is the act of growing up. You know, it's very much a metaphor for American disillusioned youth in the 70s and 80s who weren't quite sure what they were trying to get into. You know, and Star Wars, for a relatively simplistic narrative, gets in a lot of weird political questions at times, you know, especially once the prequels got involved. But, you know, for something that looks like good guys versus bad guys, you know, it gives us sort of an outline to the world in how complex it actually gets. And, you know, who the bad guys are, what actually is bad. You know, the prequels make it more or less obvious that the Jedi kind of cause a lot of problems themselves by their own, I don't want to say arrogance, but perhaps overconfidence, and combined with a lack of seeing their own context. Boy, that one got away from me. But no, I think it really comes down to the journey of those central characters, you know, the central six in Star Wars, Han, Leia, Luke, Chewie, R2-D2, and C-3PO, are found family in a lot of ways. You know, it is the people you come across in your life and the adventures you have as a person and the people you end up choosing who to be around. You know, the extent to which everyone bickers is what really sells the first Star Wars film. And the lack of really high-quality bickering is one of the problems with the prequels, in fact, which I actually have more love for the prequels with both, or the prequels than most. But I do think it lacks a certain charm in the way everyone's basically arguing as they're trying to save the universe and not get killed all at the same time. And, you know, and sometimes you just want that pulp adventure thing of saving the day at the last freaking minute. You know, Luke Skywalker, you know, pulling a 1 in a million, Luke Skywalker pulling out yet another 1 in a million shot is one of those things that never gets old. And you've seen The Mandalorian now, right?
Yes. Okay, including up to the very end of the second season, so we're good there.
I did not want to accidentally spoil you there, because in a lot of ways, I mean, it's going full circle there. You know, there's nothing quite like Luke Skywalker blazing in with a lightsaber and an X-wing and R2-D2 to absolutely save the day when everything seems lost. And a lot of the expanded material has tried and sometimes succeeded, but often failed at recapturing that high, that sheer, holy crap, we're actually going to make it. The MCU actually has kind of taken that place, because, you know, the end of Avengers Endgame occupies a similar spot. Yeah, so I would say, you know, if I had to bring it all down, you know, Luke Skywalker as audience surrogate and the importance of found family, and sometimes just wanting to save the day, is what Star Wars is to me.
Interesting. So, actually, on that topic, since you mentioned the idea of found family, do you feel like, and I'm going to start with the prequel trilogy, do you feel like there is some of that same kind of camaraderie in that time frame?
You know, the prequel trilogy is interesting in that it's George Lucas often gets his best ideas across by accident. You know, and there are things in there that there's a certain consistency. I don't know if he meant to have or not in a lot of his stories, because George, as Harrison Ford famously said, you can write this shit, George, but you sure can't say it. You know, the George's somewhat stilted manner of writing hurt the first movie a little bit, the very first movie, and then bringing Lawrence Kasdan to help polish things up and really improve the second and third. And in the prequels, he was kind of on his own, you know, with a little assist on the second one. And I think it lacked for that. And the prequels also very early on in the CGI era, and people were still getting used to the whole idea of acting with the green screen. And I think that hurt the warmth in the prequels more than anything else. But that said, they did, the core idea was still there in the prequels. Sometimes it's shown through almost by accident. You know, we don't see Qui-Gon Jinn very much overall in the movies. He's a fairly minor character in terms of actual screen time, but he still looms large over the entire trilogy as an influence, as Obi-Wan's father figure, and in a way, therefore, as Anakin Skywalker's grandfather figure, and, you know, as portrayed by Liam Neeson in pre-Taken mode, when he still had this sort of stentorian, you know, grandfatherly aspect to him, combined with badass that he would then later be totally associated with. But you know, the impromptu family being built over the course of the prequel movies holds together surprisingly well. But then the dynamic of Obi-Wan and Anakin and Padme, you know, is often stilted, but ever so often it really does come through. You know, I'm sure we'll get to this in a bit, but it comes through even more in the Clone Wars TV series, which is basically peak Star Wars. I mean, but, you know, the actors, you know, often Lucas's saving grace is picking really good actors, and Obi-Wan, you know, when just as Anakin, as he's just beaten Anakin on Mustafar, screams bloody murder at him and yells, you know, you are my brother, I loved you. Now, the movies have not entirely sold us on the idea that Anakin and Obi-Wan are that close. But Lord knows Ewan McGregor completely sold. You know, so, as always, we can give a lot of credit to the actors for making things work inside Star Wars.
I think that's actually an area where having some of this expanded material like the Clone Wars TV series really did a good job of taking some of that stuff and fleshing it out and making it more believable. Anakin's fall in particular seems a little bit less, well, I guess I'm going to be bad now, that it did in the films. You kind of see hints of it throughout the Clone Wars series, beyond just the you know, him killing the Tuskens in episode 2. So continuing on kind of with that thread, the thread of family and that. So, I mean, kind of talking about a smaller tight knit group there in the prequel trilogy than it sounds like. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like the sequel trilogy achieved that goal or failed to achieve that goal? Or how do you feel about that?
I find the sequel trilogy an intensely entertaining, you know, movies. I think The Force Awakens is a very good movie. I think The Last Jedi is 2/3 of an amazingly good movie, if not an actually great movie. And Rise of Skywalker is, I can say with a straight face, it's very rousing, crowd-pleasing entertainment. I don't know if it is a great, it's somewhat not a great movie. I'm not sure I can even call it a good movie, but it's a fun movie. And Star Wars in the end needs to be fun. You know, one of the things that the sequel trilogy has, the prequel trilogy back, is a certain kind of high-flying, seat of your pants adventure. You know, the prequels did not have a Han Solo, and that really, really hurt them, because you need that kind of Devil May Care attitude injected into the dynamic. And so Poe Dameron brings that in spades to the sequel trilogy. And Oscar Isaac, Lord knows, acts the living hell out of him. And in fact, one reason I cannot call Rise of Skywalker even a good movie on any way, but it gives us an hour and a half of the new central trio interacting with each other and bantering a lot. And that really, you know, even though much of Rise of Skywalker is just an endless fetch quest where it's find the gadget to open up the hooses to give us the map to the weird place, it's okay because we're following these characters along. We come to life and we like watching them, kind of bounce off each other and interact and like I said, banter. Mm-hmm. So J.K. Abrams, the one of the things he's really good at is that kind of crowd-pleasing stuff. You know, the sheer combination of terror and glee in Poe Dameron's voice as he yells, last jump, maybe forever, you know, as they're pulling off yet another series of impossible skips is really, to me, probably what I like most about the sequel trilogy. That plus all the Luke and Rey stuff and Kylo stuff in Last Jedi, I just love.
So obviously, you've mentioned that you are obviously familiar with all the films and you're familiar with Clone Wars. And that, specifically at the moment, I'm asking about canon. What other works that are still considered canon are you familiar with, and have you enjoyed?
Well, in terms of the canon, I think I'm familiar with the entire modern Star Wars canon. I haven't read all of the books that have come out in the Disney era, but I've kept up with a lot of it. And I've seen all the TV stuff, you know. I've seen all the Clone Wars, Rebels, Mandalorian, and whatever's coming after that. I even have fond memories of the two Ewok TV movies from the 80s, which I'm pretty sure are technically still canon. And after Mandalorian, apparently the Star Wars Holiday Special is also canon, given how Jon Favreau and Dave Filoni referenced every freaking canon they get. What was the question again? I'm sorry.
Well, it's kind of, yeah, it was what works were you following, I guess, was kind of where I was going with that, yeah. So the movies, you've seen the TV shows, some of the novels.
In terms of what works for me, I think what I love about the Clone Wars TV series is it fills in the gaps that were absolutely positively necessary in the prequel trilogy that we missed. You know, the Clone Wars itself, you know, is only spoken in one line of dialogue in the first Star Wars movie. And so people were curious about it for decades. And the movies, you know, movie 2 ends with the first fight of the Clone Wars, and movie 3 begins with the last last one, and literally everything else is in between there. And I think missing out on seeing Anakin at war really hurt, because the Clone Wars, Star Wars is actually pretty good at show don't tell most of the time, but in terms of the character of Anakin Skywalker, I think it failed on that front more or less, because you never see the character that everyone else is actually talking about. Luke, you know, sees Anakin Skywalker as this great hero that, you know, might be worthy of redemption. And Obi-Wan and Yoda talk about Anakin as a great hero that, you know, died. And there's all this about Anakin going on, but you never see it in he himself, you know. And I put a lot of limit on that to the writing, you know. But the Clone Wars TV series really fills in those gaps of here is Anakin Skywalker, the great high-flying galactic hero, you know, the one that you see what was lost. You know, when I watch episode 2, you know, I have a hard time looking at Anakin Skywalker and saying, oh my God, it is so horrible that this great person was lost in doubt. I have a hard time getting that because the script just doesn't do a lot of wonders. And that's a shame, because episode 2 is the primary way we get to know Anakin, you know, pre-fall, because so much happens in such a short time in the second movie, or in the third movie. Yeah. So anyway, yeah, boy, I'm going in more far afield than I expected. Long story short, the Clone Wars fills in all the gaps we need to, and we see how step by step Anakin becomes a little too enamored of the dark side, in ways that even we as viewers feel, you know, a little bit crowd pleasing, you know, at the time. You know, there's a point, you know, I think in the second season where some bounty hunter or another has, I forget what the exact, but basically a lot of people are going to die, and Anakin and Mace Windu and Obi-Wan, you know, basically use the Force to break this guy's mind to get him to tell them, you know, how to save all these lives. And it's one of those early disquieting moments of, it's kind of like watching 24 when Jack Bauer starts, you know, torturing people. You start realizing, wait, are we still the good guys here? You know, is this the right thing to do? And you see, it gives a much more subtle approach to how Anakin's anger and rage and his willingness to cut corners to accomplish his goal can really get very dangerous.
Wow, there's a lot to unpack there.
I think your question was what parts of the other canon do I like? Well, there you go.
So, have you been following the current run of Marvel Comics?
Yes, I have.
Okay. So you're current on all. So obviously, there was the recent the first generation of those after the reset, kind of covered the time between episodes 4 and 5, and then now we're kind of covering with the reset at this year.
Yeah.
Time between episodes 5 and 6.
I'm less familiar with the first reset because I don't think I've read all of those, but the second reset, the post Empire comics, I've been reading religiously.
Okay. Yeah, and there's obviously that's just been in since 2020 that all those flipped back over again, and there have been not a ton of issues actually at this point. Plus, you know, if like me you're following via Marvel Unlimited, then you're even farther behind, much like I am, because of course I am seeing things when they finally come out. Of course, that changed this year from 6 months to 3, so that's exciting. But okay, so you are following the comics as well, and that, I mean, between TV series, movies, comics, some of the novels, that's most of everything. I mean, I'm not going to ask you. So are you getting the books where you press a button and Chewbacca roars? I don't think your kids are out of that age, of course.
No, they're out of that age. I think the last novel I actually read was the Ahsoka novel.
Okay, so there is the first part of my interview with Paul Pogue. We will continue next week with more of that. Thank you for listening to the podcast this week. I hope you enjoyed it. I enjoyed recording it. It's kind of weird to have so much to say when you know, weeks have gone by where I've done 120 items in a week or whatever, and just you made huge amounts of progress. And this week, and this week, it's been 2 weeks since I recorded, and I've done one item. I know, crazy, right? But nonetheless, it was an interesting week, and glad to be able to talk about some things. Looking forward to getting back into the project in a real sense here, and yeah. Hope you all had a great Christmas and or whatever other holidays that you celebrate. And I hope that you all have a fantastic celebration of the new year, and that 2020 is everything you hoped and more. Talk to you soon.